If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. This is Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Reut on today's News Talk, TNT.
Thank you for joining me on Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Reut. It is 7 p.m. in Sydney, 4 p.m. in Singapore, and 8 a.m. in London. So whether you're watching live or on the on-demand stream, thank you so much for joining us on our great technological adventure. Now, although we do look at all aspects of technology on this show, we also have the themes of AI and security, with both being massive hot topic issues in the 2020s. Today's guest, who will be joining us in a few minutes, is Mark Gorry, the Managing Director of Gen Digital in the APAC region, which has a range of cybersecurity brands, including Norton, AVG, LifeLock, and more. And we'll be speaking with Mark very soon. But first, the week's biggest news comes from NVIDIA. Now, NVIDIA is a company known for making graphics cards, many of which power the incredible graphics seen in the latest games. NVIDIA's graphics chips have also been ideal for artificial intelligence, and its chips have been so popular and successful, NVIDIA's valuation rose to $1 trillion last year and now stands at a whopping $2 trillion US dollars. NVIDIA's founder and CEO is Jensen Huang, and NVIDIA had its GTC conference earlier this week, which stands for the GPU Technology Conference, and GPU is the graphical processing unit, the chip that does the graphics, separate to the chip that powers your computer, like the Intel or AMD or Qualcomm chips or Apple chips, on depending which device you have. Now, you can go to www.nvidia.com to watch the two-hour keynote presentation for yourself. And if you search on YouTube, you'll find some 16 and 20-minute supercuts that people have made, so you can see the most important parts of the conference without watching the entire thing. Although I'd recommend watching the full event in lieu of some movie that you might regret watching, as you'll see that these keynotes are usually a sci-fi presentation that is set to become science fact in just a few months' time. Now, NVIDIA has been in the graphics business since founding in 1993, and its massive valuation today is thanks to the H100 processor that has been powering ChatGPT and the generative AI revolution, with many companies using the H100 powered systems and inside their data centers to perform all of the AI magic that we're now taking for granted. That said, anyone who's used ChatGPT and similar systems knows that the responses can at times be slow, given the massive number of users all wanting to get answers at the same time. And creating newer and faster chips to do the same work while using less power is one of the things that we expect from the technological revolution. Now, the new chip is dubbed the B200, with the B denoting the Blackwell platform, named after mathematician David Harold Blackwell. He's an American statistician and mathematician who made significant contributions to game theory, probability theory, information theory, and statistics. And I think he died in 2010. So he's been not with us, unfortunately, to see this AI revolution at work, but he's certainly remembered. Now, alongside an even more powerful version of this processor is called the GB200. And NVIDIA is promising a new era of computing with B200 and GB200 chips ranging in speed from 7 to 30 times faster than the H100, while consuming up to 25 times less power. And there's actually this GB200 chips that takes two of the B200s together for a whopping 208, I think, trillion transistors. So they're taking the two of the biggest chips that you can get, joining them together in a way that the chip thinks it's one giant chip. And this delivers up to 20 petaflops of horsepower. And in practical terms, this level of performance is beneficial for tackling increasingly demanding computational challenges with ease. So we're getting, as I said, 30 times the performance and 25 times less power. And there are an example of what this means is that a large language model comprised of 1.8 trillion parameters would normally need 8,000 H100 chips and 15 megawatts of power. But using the new B200, you would require only 2,000 processors, which is a quarter of the amount, and would only use about 4 megawatts of power, which is also roughly a quarter of the power usage. And data centers, you know, they love to lower the amount of power they're using because they can put in more compute power. Now, these chips, the H100s, cost around about $30,000 US each, and systems can have multiples of these. So B200s will presumably cost a bit more to start with, but eventually the prices will come down. Availability is set to start later this year, and no doubt the open AIs of the world are already helping NVIDIA to work on these. And you'll be able to get a rack. So currently there's a rack that has a stack of H100 chips inside. You can pull it out and then slide in a new rack with the B200 chips. You don't have to change any of the software or anything you're doing. You'll immediately get a big power boost. Now, before we go to Mark, there's also news from NVIDIA of Project Groot, GR00T. And this is a general purpose foundation model for humanoid robots designed to further work driving breakthroughs in robotics and embodied AI, which is AI inside the robot's brain. And this Groot stands for Generalist Robot 00 Technology. So there's also another computer they unveil called Jetson Thor for humanoid robots based on the NVIDIA Thor system on a chip, as well as significant updates to its Isaac robotics platform. And I'm assuming that Jetson relates to the Jetsons cartoon, which featured Rosie the Robot. And Isaac presumably relates to Isaac Asimov, who was famous for his work in sci-fi robotics that still reverberates today. So robots powered by Groot will be designed to understand natural language and emulate movements by observing human actions, quickly learning coordination, dexterity, and other skills in order to navigate, adapt, and interact with the real world. And in the keynote, we saw 8 such robots on stage with him. We didn't see the Tesla Optimus robot. Elon, I keep thinking Mark Zuckerberg, but Elon Musk is sort of fighting with the rest of the industry for supremacy. But I definitely urge you to go to NVIDIA.com and watch the keynote for yourself. Whether we'll see these robots at a commercial scale in homes by the end of the decade is yet to be seen. But the age of robots as versatile and intelligent as those seen in Star Wars is now genuinely in our future. And it's certainly exciting to see it unfolding all before us. Well, it's now time to introduce our guest this episode, Mark Gorry, the Managing Director of Gen Digital in the APAC region. And the company is well known for its cyber safety brands, including Norton, Avast, LifeLock, Avira, AVG, Reputation Defender, and CCleaner. And we'll be talking about cybercrime, identity, theft, AI, and more. But first, Mark, welcome to the program.
Great. Thanks for having me, Alex.
Yeah, well, thank you for taking the time. Now, before we go further, can you please just tell us about Gen? I mean, most people would have heard of Norton, or they would know Avast or CCleaner, but what is the Gen story, you know, in a nutshell in 2024?
Yeah, as you say, most people would have no idea who Gen is or Gen Digital. Gen is a family of brands. So people may know Symantec, Norton, LifeLock, but a bit over a year ago, we merged with Avast, which brought in Avast, AVG, CCleaner. So there's now a family of brands very much focused around consumer cyber safety is where the focus is. So look, it's an exciting union of these key, you know, very well-known cyber safety brands. So so we're together now. We've been operating for just over a year. And a lot has had to happen in the last year. So before we sort of get into 24, in that last 12 months, obviously it's a huge effort to bring all those pieces together. Because in cyber safety, you know, for us to truly protect our customers, you know, threat intelligence is critical. And so, you know, it's essentially worked like the more you see, the more you know, the more you can do to protect your customers. So obviously one of the benefits is bringing all this threat intelligence together. And so we've been working on all of that, building that out. And so that's what's been happening in the last year. We've essentially got through most of that work now. So we've got fantastic intelligence to discover problems and help our customers. So moving into 24, we start to see a lot more innovation. You know, our engineering teams have when you combine all those brands together, there's so much technology. So they've been picking and choosing all the bits and pieces of technology that they want to use. A lot of infrastructure brought together. So, you know, we're working towards that now. So we'll see more innovation, more features coming. You know, really the core of what we do is cyber safety and providing digital freedom to our customers. So which encompasses, you know, device security, but also privacy and identity are key areas because, you know, gone are the days where, you know, it's just a virus attacking your PC. You know, now it's more about the digital you. Your online identity is such a big thing because we do a lot more. You know, we use multiple devices to connect to the internet. We use multiple services. You know, how we connect is different. You know, we share so much data, and so many companies have so much data about us. So to truly protect our customers, we have to encompass all of that. And that's sort of what we're doing. And you'll see more of that in throughout 2024.
Sure. And digital freedom is a new term that I haven't heard you or Norton or Jen use before. And you did talk about privacy, and I guess you've got the VPNs. But what does digital freedom mean to Jen in a nutshell?
Yeah, like I say, it's very much allowing our customers to go online. You know, the internet's such a powerful thing. It's, how we work. We, you know, a lot of us will work remotely, you know, education, we buy. We bank, we do everything, you know, we socialize online. So it's such a powerful thing. And we want our customers to really be able to enjoy the benefits of what it offers. But unfortunately, in that space, there's a lot of bad as well. So cyber criminals are very active. Unfortunately, it continues to evolve, you know, a lot of organized crime, because it's big business. We're talking a lot of money, you know, even within Australia, we lose billions of dollars a year to cyber criminals and the activities. So we want to help protect people from those threats, so that they can use the internet freely and take the advantage of that.
Now, earlier this week you released information about how a majority of Australians worry their identity is vulnerable to cyber criminals, with a disconnect between the perceived threat of identity theft and I guess the reality of it. This obviously must be a global concern. So what kind of crimes are being committed once criminals have illegally assumed your identity? And we'll get to the various pieces of advice that you can give for people to secure their identities. But what are the sort of crimes that are now causing people so much grief and losing so much money?
Yeah. Like you point out, you know, the awareness has grown a lot. And so, yes, it came out in the research that, people are concerned about identity theft now. You know, you go back a few years, it wasn't really on the radar, but it has definitely evolved, and that awareness is there. And quite often it's from either they've suffered an attack, because now, even from the Institute of Criminology, 31% of Australians have identified that they have suffered some form of identity crime. So it is quite common. You know, or people know someone else has suffered it. So in Australia,
I'm not sure if that's my internet connection or yours, but sorry, keep going. I just checked with the studio. Are we having a connection issue with Mark, or are we okay?
To buy. We see digital wallets, being used. Mobile phone plans is another one. People taking out mobile phone plans in other people's names so they can get phones. Even tax returns, people take out, do tax returns to get refunds in other people's name. And then when, people go to make their return, it's already been lodged. And so they're sort of common ones that we would see.
And in the US, you also have the Norton LifeLock service, which I hear a lot of ads about on US radio. I mean, you've introduced some of those into Australia with the Norton 360 Advance. But are there, and we'll go through that in a moment, but are there any other sort of tips you can give to people to safeguard their identity and not sort of let that information just be freely available? I mean, you've got to be careful what you share online more than ever before.
Yeah, definitely. Like, people definitely overshare typically, and not really thinking about it. You know what you share on social media, you might share, a child's birthday, and you have their name, and their birthday announcing it. But you may actually use that as your password. We see a lot of people use child or pet's names in passwords. So inadvertently you are sharing details of, what hackers would use to try and guess what your passwords are. So you have to be very careful about what you do, or if you're away on holiday, so, people know your way. One of the key things, just good online hygiene is critical. Just doing the basics well makes a huge difference to protecting yourself. And what I mean by good online hygiene, it's passwords. You've got to have strong passwords and unique. Make sure that they're unique. You're not using the same passwords on multiple accounts. Unfortunately, we see this a lot, and even recently, a lot of credential stuffing attacks, because so much of, you know, username password information is on the dark web now. And so hackers go and throw out all these different services to see where those credentials will work. And unfortunately, it happens. So yeah, make sure your passwords are unique for all the different services you use. Make sure you're updating your apps, you know, your software on your devices, because there's a lot of fixes that come through. You know, obviously use security software to block the attacks and to help block the malicious links that you get through your different services. Just don't open, you know, a lot of people getting scam messages, whether it's text messages, emails. So don't click on those links or attachments from those unknown sources, because in most cases, you know, they are malicious. You know, they're typically using social engineering techniques like, hey, we've won a $500 gift card. Click here to share your details. That kind of stuff is typically a scam, which is credential harvesting. Make sure you're checking your bank accounts, you know, your statements, to see if there's any unusual activity on those. You know, and just what you're getting through the mail and email as well. Is there services you're getting mail for that you're not aware of? One thing I also, you know, suggest now is dark web monitoring, because so much of your, you know, people's credentials do end up on the dark web. In a lot of cases, through no fault of your own. Obviously, we hear of these large scale data breaches now, and a lot of that data does end up on the dark web. And it's the dark web, for those that don't know, it's an area of the internet. It's, you know, it's quite difficult to get into, but it's an area where a lot of criminals go and trade information, credit cards, credentials, that kind of stuff. So people can buy details about you, your cards, etc. So obviously dark web monitoring is trying to alert you to where your information has been found. So you can take, you know, steps to either change passwords, get your credit cards reissued, that kind of thing. And if you happen to know that your data has been compromised, or you have been part of a data breach, take action. You know, change your passwords, contact your bank and let them know in case cards need to be reissued, and potentially even put a block on your credit file. They're just simple things you can do. So if people do those well, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, these days you can block your credit card through the app on your phone. I lost my debit card the other day. I paid for a coffee, did something. I went to look in my wallet. I couldn't find it. I looked everywhere in the car, looked all over the place, and I realized I must have dropped it. And I went straight to my app, and I put a block on the card, so that if somebody did find it, they couldn't just tap and go anywhere. But look, It's time to take a break. So we'll join you back in a moment. But TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do. Crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We are now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. So we'll rejoin Mark Gorry after the break. This is TNT Radio.live.
TNT's Mark Morano.
And there's a whole history of this idea that the establishment, the powers that be, the regime in power, likes the idea of a little eco-terrorism to keep the population hungry. I mean, if you think about it, their policies, government policies of the Great Reset, Net Zero, Climate Agenda, are quite literally eco-terrorism, or a form of terrorism. It's, as Jesse Jackson used to say, it's economic violence, it's economic terrorism. Jesse Jackson used to say that about the Reagan administration. But in this case, it's the intentional collapse of energy, food, transportation, free speech, all to achieve and make us safer and give them more power under the auspices, if you will, of a crisis.
Mark Morano on today's News Talk TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
So many people who had no history of heart illnesses have got it now, or blood clotting after the COVID-19 vaccination. Punish those who hurt people with COVID madness. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
You're back with Alex Zaharov-Royt on Talking Tech on TNTRadio.live, and my guest tonight is Mark Gorry, the Managing Director for the APAC region of Gen Digital. Now, Mark, what role is AI playing not only in helping the bad guys be better criminals, but in helping the good guys to protect us end users in ever more intelligent and proactive ways?
AI is a hot topic at the moment. Obviously a lot of good. We see a lot of benefits from AI, but whenever there's the good, there's always the bad. And we are seeing a lot of activity at the moment around AI. The cyber criminals, we see a lot of activity in hacker forums talking about the use. I'd say one of the main areas, and it's most concerning for consumers, is the scams that we see, the messages that we're getting. They're using AI a lot more to, make them far more legitimate, more sophisticated, because, a lot of people assume that they could correctly identify scam messages these days, because there was historically, poorly written emails people felt they were comfortable to identify those scams and delete them. But with AI now, some of the attacks that I've seen, it's very difficult to pick whether they're real or not. So I think days have gone where you can assume that you can easily identify a scam. You need to be very careful now. So we're seeing definitely a lot more AI usage in, the production of scam attacks. But even within, typically writing virus code, AI can help people that have no programming skills whatsoever, they can actually create fairly simple attack programs through the use of AI. So it's definitely bringing more people into the space. You don't have to be that technical anymore to be able to perform attacks. So there's definitely a lot happening. For us, we've actually been using machine learning and AI for many years, and we have to, because the scale of attacks that we see, you can't just do it with people alone. We've been using these techniques for many years, 10 years or more. Because last year we identified over 10 billion attacks. So to handle that level of volume, we have to have a certain level of machine learning and quickly identify what we're seeing evolving to be able to respond to that. So we have been using it, but I suppose it's moving to the next step now, to bringing AI more to the customer interaction. We're starting more of that. That's what's happening in AI at the moment.
Sure. Well, that leads me to the next question about which AI features and software does Gen offer across its portfolio, which just weren't standard a couple of years ago. And I know that you've launched something called the Norton Genie app for iPhones and Androids. I mean, that's one of those AI features. How does that work, and what other AI features might we expect to see soon?
Norton Genie was a tool, an AI-driven tool that we released to the market. We released it late last year, and it was very much targeted at scams. Scams were getting so big, we really wanted to come up with something to help people, on the fly, because a lot of scams have evolved quite quickly. Some attacks, last for hours, so you have to be very quick. And so we're using our AI technology to quickly identify the scam attacks. So we created Norton Genie, put it out last year. Because it's built on AI, it needs to do a lot of learning. So it started its learning process from late last year, and it's doing really well now. So I find, you know, I'm using it locally, and I'm finding a lot of the attacks that, especially like text messages, I throw at Norton Genie, and it quickly identifies, you know, that it's a scam. So most of the ones that, I definitely believe to be a scam, it's identifying correctly. So it's something we'd recommend. Like, it's a free tool. We put it out there just to do the learning. So feel free to go up to the app stores, download it. Whether it's a text message, an email, social media post, even a web page, you can send that through to Genie, and it'll come back and tell you whether it's a scam or not. There's a web version of it. If you just want to, you know, test, you know, web links, you can do that. We'll start to see more of that technology come into the other products now, because it has evolved to, because it had to do its learning phase, and it's done that now. So we'll start to see that technology come into the other products, because it is performing so well. And it's ultimately just feeding that threat intelligent engine, because it does a lot of web reputation work as at the same time. So that is coming into the product. And so we'll see more of that coming out. But clearly scams are a big issue for people. So yeah, definitely a lot of work around scams, because they just, like I say, they evolve so quickly. And unfortunately, yeah, in Australia, scams are a massive problem, especially for the elderly. They're very vulnerable. I attended the Seniors Festival in Sydney, not last week, week before. And yes, unfortunately, so many of the people we spoke to were victims of scams. So it's so common. So definitely, if someone has elderly parents that are, you feel vulnerable to scams, definitely get Norton Genie on their devices, so they can at least be checking before they're being compromised by these scams.
Yeah, and that's Genie, spelled G-E-N-I-E. And as you were saying, it's a free app for iPhones and Androids. You don't have to actually be a Norton customer to use it. And in fact, there was just in the paper earlier this week a story of a gentleman who was originally Filipino, but he was now in Australia, and he got an email from somebody claiming to be from a bank in the Philippines, and a relative of his, and this particular fraudster sent through a death certificate, and it was apparently being left $3.8 million. But he had to send some money to them first for them to be able to clear the funds. And in the end, he sent through his entire life savings on the guarantee, or the promise that this other money was coming. And when you sort of think, well, nearly $4 million is coming my way, what's a few tens of thousands? Although obviously that should be ringing massive alarm bells. And it's incredible to think that, people don't talk to somebody else in the family. They don't call us here on TNT, or ring their local radio station, or go to the police, or ask their doctor or the chemist, anybody, their neighbor, their own family members. Does this look legit? Because it might look legit to you, but somebody else might instantly recognize it. And in fact, I had another friend who received a Facebook message from James Douglas Packer. Now, I didn't know that James Packer had the middle name Douglas, but I went online and had a look. For those wondering, James Packer is one of Australia's billionaires. And the funny thing is, this particular person had spoken to James Packer's father some 30 years ago. And so I don't know if the scammer would have ever known that, but he sort of lucked onto somebody who did know this guy's father. And so, this collegial conversation starts up, but obviously something twigged, because he asked his friend, who then asked me, and I said, well, have you got a copy of the interaction? So they copied and pasted it, and I performed the role of Norton Genie. I looked at it, and straight away I knew that it was a scam, because it was misspelled. And again, AI should be fixing all those spelling errors. But it didn't take long in the conversation for the supposed James Douglas Packer, billionaire, to start spruik. Oh, and that's actually something else that has been happening with software, where you do these little things, and then you get balloons and other things popping up, because it's something that's built into the software inside of Apple devices. And those balloons and fireworks have actually appeared at very strange times. So I'd never thought I'd have that snappy happen to me, because I'm not using FaceTime. I'm just using Zoom, but it's obviously built in. But anyway, he had this message from James Douglas Packer spruiking Bitcoin as an investment. And it's like, nah, I don't think a billionaire needs to be contacting people at random on the internet about Bitcoin investments. And I mean, some of the stories you must have seen of some of the scams must blow your mind at how simple they are, and yet they catch so many people.
Oh, yeah. you know, as you mentioned, like investment scams in particular are a real problem. The use of deep fake, so obviously AI technology to develop those deep fakes is catching a lot of people out. Mm. And yeah, it's, you know, it doesn't take a lot. It's, you know, they obviously prey on people's, you know, vulnerability or what they're concerned about, or, you know, people's goodwill, just wanting to help other people is, you know, how a lot of the attacks actually work. So it's really unfortunate. So you got to verify everything that you're looking at these days, unfortunately, because you don't want to be caught out, because we're really seeing some terrible stories, you know, people that have been caught out through scams or just, you know, suffering identity theft. You know, one of the cases I saw through the news late last year, the Victorian couple who went overseas, and unfortunately their phone got, the SIM got ported. Now, for a lot of people who are obviously doing the right thing and two-factor authentication, where you get those codes to help with your logins, unfortunately, you know, just before they went, one of the phones got compromised, and the obviously any two-factor codes were being sent to the hacker and not to the couple. They went away on their trip, and while they were away, the criminals emptied out their bank accounts, and, you know, obviously retirement savings, sold their shares. So they got access to their share accounts, sold off shares. By the time they got back, there was 20 credit cards that had been sent through the mail. So they'd applied for multiple credit cards and obviously were using the credit cards. Like, it was one of the worst cases of identity theft that I've seen, and that's as bad as it gets. But unfortunately, like, it can be really bad. And the effort involved then to, you know, go through the process to try and recover this is incredibly time consuming and difficult. And, you know, a lot of people really don't know what to do. So it's a real problem.
Were they Norton 360 Advanced customers by any chance, or this was just one of the stories you heard about?
No, it was one of the stories I heard about. Unfortunately, they weren't, because if they were, yes, they could have. We have a restoration team. So part of our identity service now involves restoration. And we built that. That come from the LifeLock business that we acquired some years ago, because we could see identity theft was going to be a big issue moving forward. And that service allows someone to contact us and say, look, I'm a victim of identity theft. You know, what should I do? So our agents help people through the whole process from start to finish. You work with that same agent, and that can go for months and months, because recovering from identity theft typically takes a long time. And so it's a step-by-step process on, you know, identifying what's been lost, who we need to contact, whether you need to get documents reissued. You know, do you need to get your credit report, you know, cleared? Because, you know, a lot of the activity ends up, you know, affecting your credit, which means you may not be able to apply for loans in the future or credit cards. And so we help people through that whole process. And it's quite extensive. And yeah, unfortunately for that couple, they weren't a customer. But it's interesting, we did have another case, and something that's people wouldn't even really think about. A lady that we were able to help last year, she was in the media as well. She had been the victim. Her credentials were lost. She suffered a credential stuffing attack. They got access to her PayPal account. Unfortunately, these cyber criminals sold counterfeit goods through her PayPal account. And then she had copyright infringement brought against her by Adidas and NBA in the US. So her problem actually now become located in the US. So it wasn't a local problem here. And yeah, she had a lot of issues. She was found that she was ultimately responsible, and the claim against her was worth $1.2 million. You know, and she's just a single mom, so she obviously couldn't, she wasn't able to obviously afford these kind of, claims hanging over her head. Yeah, she went to the media ultimately to try and get assistance to help her out. And then obviously, because we had our restoration service, we actually did reach out and see if we could help assist her. And we were able to. It took quite a while, but we were able to clear her of those cases against her. which is really exciting. And it was obviously a really good test of the service for us to, because identity crime does cross borders. Mm-hmm. So it was a good outcome in the end. So yeah, it was a good story.
Well, we're going to take another quick break. If you love a good documentary, then you'll love our special screenings, Uninterrupted. Cinema features some of the latest or notable documentaries from the world's best filmmakers. You can check out TNT's website for more information. Weekends are better when you spend it with us on today's News Talk. TNT, back after the break.
I'm Cal Fire Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez. And normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least two exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
My character Shazam knows all about growing up in a family full of teenage superheroes. They're bold.
Where's everyone going?
To fight crime.
Okay.
Adventurous. Shazam! There's never a dull moment. And no matter what happens, they'll always have your back. All they need is a place to grow and be themselves. And the best part is, you don't have to be a superhero to adopt a teen. Learn more about adopting a teen from foster care. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward.
Alex Zaharoff-Reut is talking tech on today's News Talk, TNT.
Thanks for joining us again on TNTRadio.live. Now, Mark, with generative AI allowing end users to talk to their computers and even computer programs like human beings, I mean, anyone who's tried ChatGPT knows that. Is Gen planning to add this conversational interface in the future to its various products or services, or does more work yet need to be done for this to be truly rock solid reliable?
Yeah, look, at the moment, obviously with Norton Genie, there is a conversational aspect to that, not talking to it, but, you can ask it questions directly about scams. Within the product itself, not so much about, settings or anything that you can do. To be honest, I'm really uncertain as to how far that is away, but clearly it would make sense. But one thing I'd point out is, With security, it's quite confusing for most people. So really, most of our customers rely on us to set the correct default settings of the product so that they are protected. Because what do I do with my firewall, or how do I deal with these attacks? The average user's got really no idea. So they're very much not wanting to do their own settings themselves anyway. They're very much reliant on us. And so that's why, at the moment, we really apply the defaults to make sure that we protect people. There is other areas, definitely within our dark web alerts. People typically have questions around that. So we do have chatbot capability to address concerns that people may have about the alert that they got. Because yes, when people hear of that, we found their data on the dark web, it's like, what does that mean? What's going to happen to me now? So that's where, that chatbot's very much address the concerns of people, and so people can use that. So they're the key things that are available now. I'm sure more will evolve because AI is evolving very quickly now, so more to come, I'm sure.
Now, one of the questions I always like to ask the people I'm interviewing, can you please share a memory of your first personal computer?
When I was quite young, it was a Tandy.
TRS-80?
I think it was a TRS-80 actually. Yeah. It was the one that had like the like cassette player, and so you used to record things on like a cassette. Yeah. So I remember did some basic coding like games and that. So that was really the first computer for me.
Yeah, they affectionately would call it the trash 80, and it was called the 80 because it had the Z80 chip, which was one of the chips of the era. And of course, all those computers came with BASIC. But for many younger people today, their first memory was a Windows device. And for some of the youngest people today, it would be, you know, their iPads or their iPhones or even maybe a Vision Pro if you've been born in the past couple of years and you're lucky enough to have a parent that has one. Can't wait to see that coming to Australia, hopefully later this year. But also, can you remember the first time you came across a virus or some other malware? And was that a catalyst to one day working with one of the world's biggest cybersecurity brands, or did your role in this area sort of have nothing to do with that?
Look, all my working life I've been involved in tech, but yes, I first joined Symantec, 22 years ago. So that was around the time of the Code Red, I Love You virus. So that was sort of fairly common. But one memory I do have in the Sydney office, behind where I sat was a closed off room, so people couldn't access that area. So it was our threat researchers actually sat in that room. And I remember coming to work one day, and the threat analysts had come out, and they'd actually discovered. So the bugbear virus was actually discovered in the threat research lab in the Sydney office there. So I remember it was all the chatter in the office that particular morning because they discovered it. Yeah.
And most of the security companies do work with each other, so that information is usually shared very quickly with all the other security companies so that everybody can sort of work together and protect all their customers, no matter whose customers they are.
That's correct, yeah. A lot of information is shared across different, you know, because ultimately we're all about protecting, consumers. So, yeah, a lot of information is shared.
I do remember one presentation that we were at where you were launching one of the versions of Norton 360, and we were in a little, like a little boardroom, but we could see into the security operations center, the SOC, and you could sort of push a button and all of the windows basically turned gray, so you couldn't see in, and you sort of had to push the button so we could see in. So, I mean, you certainly do take security very seriously.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like I say, there's... the scale of what we see now, it's phenomenal. It's mind-boggling. Like even for me, I've been in this space for years. But yeah, like I say, last year we discovered, you know, over 10 billion attacks, which is phenomenal. And on any given month, you know, we process 480 billion URLs to check for, you know, security threats. And you know, we talk about, you know, the machine learning and, you know, the AI that we do, because all this threat intelligence all comes together and, you know, we use it. So there's 6 petabytes of data that we use for our data sets, for our learning that goes on. So mind-boggling numbers, and just shows you the scale of, you know, what happens. So there is... behind what people see, that app or the, you know, on the PC, there's a lot happening in the background.
And my second last question is to ask if you could please share some of the best advice you received in life to help you get where you are today.
Well, that's a tough one. Work hard. I've been lucky. I've worked hard. If you do well, you find your progress. So, you know, I've been pretty lucky in that respect. But, you know, I think it's important. You got to find that balance as well. I think for a lot of people now, work, it's, very time consuming. But, you know, ultimately we've got to remember, you know, what we're all working for. So family is clearly very important. We need to always remember.
Absolutely. So what is your final message to the viewers, listeners, and readers?
Be safe. As I mentioned before, practice that good online hygiene. It will make a big difference. And just be very careful, you know, always verify if you're uncertain about anything, just because, unfortunately, the scams, the attacks that we see are here to stay. We don't see it dropping off anytime soon. So, yeah, please be safe.
Well, Mark Gurry, the... Managing Director for the APAC region of Gen Digital. Thank you very much for your time, and I look forward to speaking with you again in the future.
Great. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you so much. Well, it's time for some more news before we get towards the end of the program and we join Lembit Opik in about 10 minutes time. Now, LG has, in the last week or so, launched some new TVs. If you heard me speaking with Chris Smith earlier this week on Cyber Wednesday, where I appeared with him at 5:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Saving Time, we'll soon be switching back to winter time pretty soon. But they launched 35 new OLED models enhanced with powerful AI processors and brighter screens. Now, interestingly, they had a couple of mid-range models. They had their OLED and QNED TVs. OLED is the organic light emitting diode, where the light actually comes out of the pixel itself, and you get really colorful, bright images and really dark blacks, because when you turn the light source off, it's black. You don't have a light shining through an LCD to look gray, as it were. But LG also has something called QNED, quantum nano-emitting diodes, which are a kind of LCD version of OLED, not as good as OLED, but cheaper. And they've got their 55 and 65-inch models in OLED, which are 20% cheaper than the same ones last year. And their QNED models, 65-inch model, it's 25% cheaper than the 2023 launch. And that's interesting. I mean, normally with technology, the price does come down. But of course, we've been in this age of inflation where prices have gone up. You know, there have been supply chain disruptions and global wars and all sorts of interesting problems. And we've seen prices creeping up everywhere. So it's interesting to see technology is still able to bring prices down. But they now have a 98-inch QNED television and a 97-inch OLED television. And if you go to my website, techadvice.life, you can see that I filmed the entire presentation that LG gave to the media. So you don't just have to read what people think about the launch. I actually, when I go to these launches, where I'm allowed to, which is most of the time, I actually film the presentation. So you can see it and watch for yourself. And they showcased a 75-inch TV next to the 98-inch TV. And wow, the 98-inch one is just, it's incredible. It's massive. It's huge. And in fact, on some of these TVs, using what's known as the Alpha 11 processor, the most advanced processor, that you can have four separate television images at the same time. So you could have one sports event, another sports event, some other TV show, and they had an internal camera you could attach to the top, and they were showing us these four images at the same time. And I was joking that this must have been a bit like Back to the Future 2, where in the 80s when that movie came out, or the 90s, whenever it was, you know, they had Michael J. Fox, the older version, watching four TV screens at the same time, which was a fantastical thing when the movie came out. But now you can, it's just a standard part of your TV. And they're more affordable models could show two images at the same time. So you could have a TV show or a movie playing, or TNT Radio.live playing on one side. And on the other side, you could have your laptop, for example, you could be doing some work or doing something else. So it's actually quite normal now to be able to have a couple of different images at the same time if you want that. And if you looked at the difference between the 2023 and the 2024 models, and again, that's in the video, you could see that the newest models were sharper and brighter. And that's what you expect from a year-by-year update. But interestingly, and this, I think, is an LG exclusive, I haven't heard of anyone else doing this, but the TVs will give you 5 years worth of WebOS updates. Now, WebOS is the operating system that LG uses to power its smart TV interface. And so normally when you buy a television, you only get security updates for that year. And it's very, you know, unusual to get multiple years of updates. It's unusual to get an update at all on a lot of these TVs. You have to update it by buying a new TV. And that's why, you know, most people hang on to their TVs for 4 or 5 years or thereabouts. And if they want to make an older TV more up to date with a lot of the smart TV stuff to be able to do apps and watch the streaming services or put on YouTube or Rumble so you can watch TNT Radio.live, for example, you buy yourself a little Apple TV or an Amazon Fire Stick or a Google Chromecast with TV, and your older screen can get the update. But of course, with newer screens, you have the ability to have HD, high dynamic range imagery, and you get sort of Dolby Atmos capabilities, and you get quicker operation. The apps flick through quicker, and you can also, as I said before, get those smoother pictures and sharper images. But LG also had two other televisions. One was the Stand By Me. It's a 27-inch TV on a stand that you can move around. It's got wheels underneath, and it's got 2 or 3 hours of battery life. So you can actually take it with you to different rooms of the house. You can even take it outside if you're barbecuing or doing some work there and have the TV going or playing Spotify or, doing any of the sort of streaming TV things that you can do with a streaming TV. And they had this other model in a case, a 27-inch model in which looks like a giant briefcase. So you can take that if you go camping or if you've got to give presentations and you want a screen that's bigger than your traditional, 13, 15 or 17-inch laptop screen. And interestingly, this could also be put down flat in the, in the suitcase sort of thing. And it's a touch screen. So you could play chess and other board games. So it didn't have a regular TV tuner built in, but it had, and you could plug in a portable set-top box if you wanted to. And if you're camping, you'd have to put the antenna up quite high. But it had all of the streaming TV services. So in Australia, that's all the free-to-air channels and some of the pay TV ones. And, in the States and elsewhere, you'd have all the HBOs and Peacocks and all the rest. So interesting to see how televisions have become portable and so portable that they come in briefcases with, 2 or 3 hours of battery life and you can plug it in. We also saw this week research firm Telsyte saying that Australia's smart home market is set to crack $2.5 billion driven by AI, energy savings and security, and that by 2027, this will grow to $5.1 billion. And this dovetails very nicely with last week's episode with Steve Sammartino, an Australian futurist. And he was talking about the same sorts of things where smart homes will become mainstream, even though it costs extra. I mean, a lot of the smart home devices that people have now actually are more or less out of date because they're going to be imbued with this generative AI capability where you can talk to your fridge and say, hey, when was the last time I put milk in there? How long has the fish been in the fridge? How much longer does it have to go on the wash cycle for the washing machine? You can sort of interrogate your house about the various things that it's doing and get answers. And so this is going to grow. We'll see robots and EVs and renewables ramp up the smart home. In-home AI will really be taking hold. And in 2023, there were an average of 23.8 connected devices with 16.1 non-smart devices, 7.1 smart home devices, and things like modems. But this is obviously going to grow. Hybrid work is here to stay, even though there's a push to go back to the office. Smart home security cameras are putting smart devices to work, and people are even going for subscriptions where some of these devices you'll rent them as opposed to buying them outright. And the benefit of that is that after a couple of years, you'll just get the new one as opposed to having to buy something and then sell it. But we have to watch out that we don't, rent everything and own nothing and be happy. We've got to watch out. I still prefer ownership. I love ownership of things. There's also the talk that Google and Apple will partner to give AI capabilities on the next version of iOS due in September, October this year when they launch the new iPhones. But we're going to learn about this in June at the Worldwide Developer Conference. And Apple has been very much behind in the AI stakes. And so it'll be interesting to see if they go with OpenAI or Google or somebody else. Because if the AI hallucinates and gives you wrong information, they'll be able to say, well, that was information coming from Google, not from us. But no doubt Apple is working very hard behind the scenes to, be able to introduce those capabilities on its own. They don't want to be relied upon Google. Then Microsoft also launched their new Surface Laptop 6 and Surface Pro 10 computers. There was no OLED screens, as the rumors suggested. In some senses, it's a bit of a spec bump. They look similar to the ones from last year. There is a new Copilot key on the keyboard that brings up the Windows Copilot Gen AI system powered by ChatGPT. But the big announcements for the next version of Windows will come in May. So this was an update for businesses. There was no consumer launch. That's happening in May. So slightly disappointing in that regard, but obviously Microsoft is biding its time. And then iPads, they're supposed to launch this week. If they do, we'll talk about it next week. But that's all the time we have on this week's episode of Talking Tech with Alexander Voigt. Up next for the next 5 hours is the fantastic Lembit Opik live from the UK. I'll see you on Wednesday and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.